Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner. With Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show. I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game. Cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, coming at you here on Blog Talk Radio. It is Thursday, March 9th, 2017, and we have a great show for you today. None other than Johnny Henricks is going to be calling in. Johnny Big Rig Henricks, who just recently fought at 185 pounds. Of course, Johnny was the former UFC welterweight champion. Many, many people feel that Johnny took GSP's soul, took his heart. And we're going to get to him in a few seconds here. And this is what type of guy he is. I think this really says a lot. He's juggling around, watching his children and trying to make time for us. So we really, really appreciate that. Again, I think that says a lot about Johnny and his willingness. We've had him on the program before. Back in 2009, I believe, you know, before he became the UFC world welterweight champion. And, you know, he's really, really had a real, real interesting career. And we all saw his fight against Hector Lombard. And I got to tell you, he really turned a lot of heads. We want to talk about his future. He is in training. And, you know, you've got this upcoming UFC 211 card. And Johnny wants to get on it, and he does, I believe, have a fight booked for that. So I want to ask him about that, you know, if he can reveal who his opponent is, because we'd love to find that out. I mean, that's going to be huge. It's going to be a huge fight, no matter who it is, no matter who he's fighting. That is just absolutely amazing. So we'll talk to him about that, and I want to talk later about UFC Fight Night 106. That's taking place this weekend in Fortaleza, Brazil. I'm really, really excited for this card. There's a lot of interesting fights on this card, probably better than some of the pay-per-views that the UFC has had. But without further ado, let's go to Johnny Henricks, who's nice enough to join us here on a busy, busy evening. Johnny, how are you today?
Doing good. How you been?
Good, man. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to talk to us. I know you're very, very busy, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's been a while since we've spoken to you. The last time I think we spoke to you was actually sometime back in 2009, and this is before your dominant run in the UFC. and before your controversial fight versus GSP, and obviously this is before you won the title at 170. But before we talk about any other movements or moments in your career, I wanted to talk about your impressive debut at 185 and your gutsy win against Hector Lombard. Because I have to admit, when the fight was announced, I was a little worried for you. I mean, even though Lombard isn't huge for 185, and he fought at 170 like you, he had experience at higher weights, and he's got great wrestling, and he's a devastating striker. And the UFC wasn't doing you any favors with that fight, in my opinion. I mean, they threw you in there with a legit guy right away. And as most people know, you know, he's an Olympic-level athlete, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and one of the hardest hitters in the sport outside of heavyweight. What was your reaction when that matchup was proposed for you, Johnny? I mean, how concerned were you about the skills Hector Lombard brought to the table?
You know what? I really wasn't. I was more worried about how, you know, really at that point, I was just worried about my body. Does it still want to cut weight? You know what I mean? Like, really, that's all that I could think about, okay? But I knew that he had heavy hands. But something weird happened in that fight, you know? Like, whenever I was training for that fight, everything leading up to it, it was I started enjoying it again. I started wanting to go to practice. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do that. I wanted to learn all over again. And then whenever I got there, you know, we still practiced. I think I was 12 over, 12 over when I showed up. And I mean, I was eating 3 meals a day, drinking everything I wanted to. And then the weight cut became easy. Once that happened, as soon as I made weight, you know, I think I got up to like 197 again. That was the biggest I got. But what happened in the fight was, everything slowed down. Like, they were like, oh, he's a fast striker. He's this, he's this. And whenever I was in there, it reminded me of my run to the title. You know, I could see the punches coming. I could roll with them. I could dodge them. I could do things to not get hit. And that's something that I have not had in my fights in a while.
That's amazing. So basically, if I understand you, it's the weight cut, not having to really, really cut as much weight, being more comfortable, you know, at this bigger weight, sort of rejuvenated you mentally, and you got more attached to the training mentally, and you felt better mentally, which is probably the missing link, you know, that you've had for the last couple of years or so.
No, that's exactly right. You know, and here's the thing is that I've been trying to lose muscle for the last year. Okay. I didn't touch any weights for this fight, for that last fight. All I did was just do what I've been normally doing. I just didn't make it as hard. Right. And I went in there. Here's the thing is that I'm going to start lifting again. You know, I'm going to get stronger. So 185 is going to be a fun weight class for me because, you know, he didn't feel that strong to me. Now, don't get me wrong, in certain scenarios, yeah, did I struggle a little bit? Yes. But whenever I was in those situations, I just capitalized it to something else. You know, and that's something that, again, I haven't had in a long time, meaning that whenever I go in for, let's say, for example, I go in for a takedown. You see how hard he was sprawling on me before I really even got in there. I mean, he was already trying to, you know what I mean, collapse on me. Well, in my mind, let's take it back to even the fight before. Did I switch it up to anything else? No. My brain wasn't, my mind wasn't thinking, hey, okay, he's doing this. Let's move to this and see if it works. I was always thinking, hey, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, even though we trained it, right? Well, in that fight, I started flowing again. I started letting my body dictate what goes on. Like, I hit a shot. I see him sprawl. Mm-hmm. Okay, next time a knee's coming. Shot, he ducks, boom, it lands. Okay, fake shot, throw a punch. Fake shot, throw a knee. And I started – it's going to be a long process for me, right? But each fight, I want to build off of that. I want to start building on what got me to the welterweight division. That's what it's going to come back to. I think everything is starting to turn point to that area for me at 180.
Yeah. You know, you said you weren't really concerned about his skill set. Were you nervous at all going into the fight, being that you basically were in a position of having to perform well for the sake of your career trajectory? And I wondered if that was weighing on you at all, you know, when you were getting ready.
Now, I wasn't. It's not that I wasn't concerned about his skills. I just didn't think that he could knock me out. Right? Like, that's really what I knew, that he was going to go out there. I knew that he was going to win. He was going to do everything he could to win, because his back was sort of on the wall like mine was, right?
Right.
And whenever I was in there, I knew that, hey, this is the only way he can beat you. If he connects with one of those, he can beat you. But my eyes came back. You know, and then that's really what it boils down to, is that I started feeling the fight game again.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the end of the fight, I mean, you were landing frequently, and you started dominating the fight, and particularly your movement in the cage seemed to become even better, almost as if you started to realize you could really compete effectively against Lombard and the rest of the division. What sort of difference did you feel between the first and third rounds in that fight, Johnny?
So the first round, I was worried about pushing myself. You know, if you look at it, all my other fights, you know, I go somewhat hard in the first round, but whenever I was going for the title, I only got stronger, 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 right?
Right.
Well, with this one, I knew I had to start strong, because that's the way Hector does. You know what I mean? The first 2 minutes, he is a devastating fighter. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to try to finish you in the first period, or first round. And whenever I was in there, I knew I had to start strong. But it worried me, because in my last fights, if I pushed like that, the second round, forget about it. The third round, you're just trying to get off the stool. You know, I would never let them see that while I'm competing, right? But after the fight, I'd just go back in the back and go, oh my gosh. You know, I'd just sit down for 30 minutes and trying to recoup. You know, that's how the weight cuts have always, you know, the last couple of years have been. And this fight, I pushed myself a little bit harder the second round. And the third round, I was like, oh, my gosh. I feel like I haven't fought a round yet.
Yeah.
And I really put that to, instead of running 8 miles a day to make weight for, you know, for 4 weeks, 5 weeks out of the year or out of the month, of, you know, a 12-week fight camp, five of them you're trying to run every day, you're just killing your body. You're breaking it down, breaking it down, breaking it down, and you still have to do that during the fight week because you have to make 170. This time, I didn't have to do any of that. So I felt fresh, I felt good, and that was a totally different I was not expecting that. That's why I was going to try, and that's why I even talked about even retirement, because if I went out there and I felt the same way as I did at 70, all right, well, then guess what? My body's done. It's over. But now that it's gotten to become, you know, my body bounced back, I felt good in there, and I'm learning again, and training camp became fun again. I can't wait to see what I can do. And, you know, give me a year of building muscle and fighting these guys, figuring out what's going on in a year. I don't see, you know, I can't wait to see what I can do, what kind of imprint
yes.
I can put on the not the welterweight, middleweight division.
Yeah, it's like a new beginning for you. And I have to ask you, what was going through your mind at the end of the fight? Did you have any fear that it wouldn't go your way, especially based on some of the close fights you've had in the past?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, as soon as the fight was over with, I was like, I went over there and I go, even my coaches, they're like, you did enough to win this fight, just like the last one, you did enough to win this fight, and you were landing whenever you wanted to, you know. He didn't hit me as much as I hit him, right?
Right.
And so I'm going, okay, I got this. I got this. Then, but, it, and like you said, I've been in some bad calls. You're
yeah.
sitting here going, is this going to be another one? Okay. They put you in the middle and they go, all right. They read off the scorecard. They don't say a name. You're going, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Because the first one they start off with is a 29-28 bout. You're going, oh. Yeah. They, you know what I mean? They beat, they're going to give it to him. That's exactly what I thought. Then they read off a 30-27. I was going, okay. Okay, that's definitely me. And
yeah.
then they called my name. I was like, oh, thank goodness. You know, the streak is over. Now I can go back home with a W, with a boost of confidence, and at a different weight class and build off of that. You know, I don't want to be satisfied with that. You know, I'm starting to lift weight. I'm starting to move forward to my next one.
Now, am I right in saying that you moved away from Team Takedown? Because last time we spoke to you, you were with them. And we spoke about, you know, the unique deal some of the athletes had from that team, where you apparently received a set salary from the team in exchange for giving them a bigger percentage of your fight purses than most competitors do.
Yeah. And yeah, no, I'm away from them now. I'm representing myself. It's sort of, you know, it's been sort of nice. When it comes to training, when it comes to saying, hey, guys, I'm going here to train, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Also, when it comes to appearances and stuff like that, I can say, hey, no, I can't. You know what I mean? It's not going to a manager, and them, they you know, they might say yes, they might say no. But then they have to go to me. Then they have to go back
right.
to them and then to them. You know what I mean? I'm cutting out the middleman. So now I have more control of what I'm doing and how I'm doing it.
Yeah, so basically you just have your training camp is built around your specific needs.
Yes. You know, my striking coach, Tony Cabela, he does this, this, and this. And then I go to OSU. And then if I have to travel somewhere, I can say, hey, you know, we all get a schedule. And then on that schedule, I'll write down, hey, I got appearance here, I got appearance here. How do we work around this? You know, it's not where, all right, somebody, and you know, they know and I know that if I'm in a training camp, somebody calls me and says, hey, do you want to do this appearance? They know what the answer is going to be. It's probably most likely going to be a no because it's not on that schedule.
I see. You know, one thing that I was aware of were that you were someone who reduced the amount of head contact in sparring before these concerns about head trauma emerged. It seemed like you were ahead of the pack when I believe you went down to training one day a week or something like that. Am I right? Was there something in particular that caused you to make that change of head of many fighters?
You know what? No. You know, here's the thing is that, you know, whenever I first got into this sport, I talked to a doctor. This is before I even moved to Vegas. And a doctor told me, he's one of my friends at Oklahoma State, and he goes, hey, you know you're only allowed so many knockouts, so many concussions before it starts going bad, before you start losing stuff and this, this, and this. And so what I took off of that is, hey, I don't need to be taking that in the training whenever I have a set date and most likely I want to fight twice or three times a year, right? Why not save them for the fight time? Because let's be honest, it's a fight. You're going to get hit. Just how many times, nobody knows, right? So, but
right.
if I can prevent myself from taking, let's say, two hard hits in sparring, that saves me two hard hits I can take in the octagon.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I always
that
wear a headgear when I spar, and you know I have an extra pair of gloves that I like, and that's what I make them wear. You know, if I'm wearing 18s, hey, guess what? You're wearing 18s too. You know, I'm gonna protect. If I'm protecting myself and also you, I want the same in return.
Can you confirm this? I recall that I read a story about you getting knocked unconscious by – fully unconscious by Phil Baroni very early in your training. Was that true? And if so, do you have any regrets on being part of what some would call the wild early sparring era of MMA?
No. You know, that really was – that's what really got me into it. And it was not early. It was my first time ever to spar. Like, it was my first time literally ever to put on boxing gloves. And that's what happened. But it taught me a valuable lesson. Okay? And that's why I'm glad that it did happen. Everything happens for a reason. And God wanted me to get knocked out. Why? This is the way that I took it. I'm not ready to fight those guys. I need to train. How hard do you need to train? I need to train boxing every day. And that's why my hands got so good. I was blessed. You know, I'm still not mad about it today. Because let's say I go in there and I don't get knocked out. Would I work on my hands as hard as I did? Maybe, but maybe not. Who knows? Maybe I sit there and say, I did pretty good today. And then the people around are going, man, you did pretty good. You didn't, you know what I mean? You didn't take that many hits. You threw some punches. That was good. And they slowly build me. Instead of going from 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then at 8 to 10 o'clock, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I worked on nothing but hands.
What about your future at 185? I mean, obviously you have the raw power to compete with most people in the division. It's hard for me to imagine you aren't stronger than fighters like Anderson Silva and whatnot. But what about length and reach? I mean, some of the giants in the division, like Luke Rockhold, could present some physical problems for you. But then again, you fought much longer fighters like Carlos Condit. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Is it just depends, you know, whenever you hit that stage, how do you break them down? What are they doing that will allow me to get inside? You know, like Carlos Condit, the way that he throws, he's going to throw, and he's not going to back out much, right?
Right.
He's going to throw, and he's going to take little steps back. All right. Whenever he throws, make sure you block, get inside. Then you throw what you need to, he's going to bail. All right, I won that exchange. And then what's going to happen is he's going to start overreaching and the takedowns become easier. That's sort of the way that I had to play it. And some of these other guys, that's what I'm going to have to do too, is figure out, okay, this is how they're striking, this is how they're doing this, this is how they're doing this. How do we defeat that? Here we go.
Now, speaking of your future 185, is it true that you have another fight booked already?
You know what? That's a great question. I don't know yet. I'm trying to get one. I am.
Right.
You know, that's my goal, is to fight more. Now, you know, right now I'm eating and drinking everything I want to. I haven't worked out in 2 weeks. And I'm only waking up at 2:05, you know, so then next week is spring break. This week I started working out again. So I'm slowly getting my body, finding out what's hurting, what's not hurting. Is everything healed, from this fight, but from the previous year, you know, from killing your body over the year of time, you know, there's been some injuries that I've been trying to push through because I wanted to fight. And now I'm finding out, hey, everything's starting to heal up the way that I need to. I'm good to go. So I can't wait until after spring break. Because after spring break, it's back on and I'll be training full time. And I, you know, that's really where I'm at right now. I can't wait for the day they give me the call and say, hey, here you go.
Are you looking to get on UFC 211 since it seems like it would be perfect for you because it's in a few months and it's in Dallas?
You know, I would love to get on there, but I've been asking. I think they said it's full.
Okay.
But, you know what, there's crazier things that have happened. So,
sure.
You know, I think we're 4 weeks out or 5 weeks out from that fight. So it's going to be a little harder to get on something. I know we might be a little bit longer than that. You know, as long as it's not, you know, quicker than 4 weeks, I would do it.
Now, is there anybody in particular that you are any possible list of opponents that you have, or is there anybody that you'd like to fight in particular, just anybody really?
You know what, really, right now I'm just sort of trying to get my feel of 185. So anybody they send me, I really want to, you know, I just want to get in there. I want to fight some more. I want to feel these guys, and not only that, but with this time off, I'm going to start lifting. You know, I started lifting. I'm going to continue to lift, and I'm that's really my main focus right now is, you know, these guys have felt me without touching weights for a year. In a year's time, I can't wait to build up and be stronger than I was at welterweight, because now I don't have to worry about building up muscle and then tearing it down to make 170. I get to build and hold. And that's one of my excitements about moving to 185 is I'm going to get to do that.
Johnny, before we let you go, what are your thoughts on the announced Bisping versus GSP middleweight title fight?
I'm sort of excited about it, you know, because, you know, like we talked about, I think I can beat him. You know, I know I have won, so
yeah,
nothing has changed. Here's the thing. If he thought I was strong at welt, you know, if he thought I was on steroids and thought I was strong at 170, wait until I fight at 185 and I'm able to maintain my strength. And that's what I'm excited about. You know, and here's the thing is that, you know, I'm hoping that he goes out there and does good. I really am. You know, I like Bisping. I'm not going to say I don't. But if he does good, guess what? So can I. So that's going to build my confidence even more, right? And guess what? If he doesn't do very good, I'll see how he beat him and go, man, I get it. That's what I have to watch out for if I ever fight him, if I ever get there, right?
Well, you know, I was definitely interested when you called out GSP for a fight at 185. I mean, to me, that certainly qualifies as being unfinished business the way the last fight ended. And I know you feel the same way because you've been very vocal about your desire to fight him as well. But recently he was quoted as saying, quote, "I feel the best Johnny Hendricks I've seen is gone." What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, 170 it is. It's never going to be around. Right? You know what I mean? Like, so this, you know, here's the thing. You know why he's going 185 is because he would have a hard time making 170 with the new rules. Without an IV, it changes the game. It really does. You have to fight more to your natural weight. You know, you can't cut 40 pounds and expect the next day you're going to show up 100%. Now with IVs, yeah, you could have the, you know, I've been there. I've had the crappiest weight cut you'll ever experience in your life. And the next day I show up and I compete. It's because of the IV. Now I also get why they did it. You know, you can hide, if you're taking drugs or doing steroids, whatever, you can hide it. Well, you know, my goal is that one day maybe USADA gives us the IV. Where, you know, take a piss test. So, like, for example, you want to take an IV? All right. You got to pee in this cup. There you go. That's your pre-fight, or not your pre-fight, but that's your pre-IV test. Then after your IV test, you take it again. Just in case, you know, anybody tries to throw something else in there, right? But a USADA guy is there giving you the IV. That's sort of the way that, you know, one day I would like it to be. And if that happened, then maybe 170 could be in the future. But as of right now, I don't even want to talk about welterweight. I love middleweight a little bit too much.
It sounds like it, and it looks you look great. Do you have any prediction for Bisping versus GSP?
You know what? That's going to be a tough one because, one, Bisping has been fighting.
Right.
Two, GSP does – he is a smart fighter, right? He is a smart fighter. Why did he hold the belt for so long? Because he is a smart fighter. But is Bisping going to go out there and sort of do what I did? You know, not care about his jab, not care about, you know, his kicks, whatever he can throw at him. Is he going to go out there and not care? Is he just going to go out there and say, hey, I'll eat one to give you one and see what happens? And so, like I said, and also he hasn't fought me. What
right.
I think, you know, since I fought him, how long ago was that? 3 years?
Yeah.
Two and a half, something
yeah,
like
three,
that?
Yeah, 3+ years.
Yeah.
Well, that was my next question, too, is that do you feel that that was part of the reason why your fight with him, which, by the way, most MMA websites had you winning that fight 48-47. Okay, I thought it was a fairly easy fight to score, and he was battered. There's no question about it. Do you feel that that was part of the reason why he took a hiatus from the sport, just the fight he had with you?
You know what? I think it was leading up to that because I think that he saw the welterweight division changing. Okay, not only was I a killer at that point, right?
Right.
But you had. You know, right now, you could probably name the top 15 easy at welterweight. At other divisions, it gets a little bit more difficult. For some reason, the 55, the 170, they're just stacked. And I the only thing I can ever relate that to is that's probably the average size of a person. You know, most people are going to be 5'10", 5'11", and right around 190 pounds. So what are they going to go? They're going to go either 55 or they're going to go 170. And so that's why I think so many, you know, it's so stacked, so deep at that weight class.
Yeah, very, very good point. You make a lot of good points, Johnny. I hope that we see you very, very soon. This is like a new beginning, like Johnny Hendricks 2.0. Or something like that. I mean, it's just been great watching you all these years, and it's great hearing you. I think you would make a great, great fight analyst just by listening to your answers to these questions because you have so much knowledge about, you know, the fight game, about wrestling. We didn't even get a chance to go over your wrestling career. There's so much to cover about that. But I want to thank you for coming on the program. Before we let you go, though, do you have any sponsors or social networking sites you want to make people aware of?
Yeah, just, you know, at Johnny Hendricks on Twitter. You know, Fram, of course, Bass Pro, Dolliver Mats, you know, you know, those guys have been with me, you know, that, you know, after my fight, I made sure to thank them for, you know, they stuck through. It was a rough year, you know, and they stuck through with me. And, it, you know, now it's a new beginning, and I can't wait to see what the future holds for.
Yeah, it is, because I got to tell you, just from a personal standpoint as a fan, you know, to see somebody that was on the verge of retirement to come back and to fight in a new weight class and do as well as you did against Hector Lombard, and presumably you're going to continue the success. It's really a remarkable story that just a genuine fan can appreciate. So I look forward to watching you on your journey to middleweight title contention. It's been really, really fun. So thank you again for coming on the program. Really appreciate it, and we wish you the best of luck in the future, Johnny.
Hey, thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Johnny Hendricks here on Carson's Corner. We're going to take a brief timeout. We'll come back on the other side of this timeout here, and we'll talk about UFC 106, maybe give some thoughts about the interview we just had with Johnny, and we'll go from there. So keep it right here on Carson's Corner. You're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, we're back live here on Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson, and we want to give a big thanks to Johnny Hendricks for joining us, taking time out of his busy day. You know, he's a father, which I know he has two kids, which is more than I would want to deal with, I'll tell you that much. He's training. He's got a lot going on, and we really appreciate you know, it's not, sometimes it's not easy to juggle around things and you know, give time to schlubs like myself. But we make it happen. He made it happen, and we're glad to give you that interview here on Carson's Corner. Glad to get his insight on George St. Pierre. And people are going to be really, really interested to hear about that, his prediction, his insight into that fight versus Michael Bisping. I, on the other hand, on the underground forum, have posted a bit of a campaign to try to get people to boycott this ridiculous fight. And a lot of people out there are not maybe coming to the point where they want to boycott this, but a lot of people are just disgusted by this. Even Joe Rogan posted that he doesn't approve of this fight, saying, what's the point of having a weight class and contenders and champions if you just arbitrarily give Michael Spitzbing, as we call him here, as he's been called, a money fight in George St. Pierre. You know, now Johnny had an interesting take about the whole IV ban, the UFC IV ban, affecting George St. Pierre to the point where George St. Pierre can no longer fight at 170. That's very interesting, because I don't know if George St. Pierre has ever had difficulty making 170. I don't recall if he's ever had any problems, you know, making 170. But, you know, everybody has acknowledged that he walks around at above 170. I mean, obviously, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. So, you know, there's just so many different things. Who did George St. Pierre want? Did George St. Pierre want to fight? I'm sure George St. Pierre wanted to fight somebody else, wanted to fight Nick Diaz or somebody else, you know, for his first fight coming back at welterweight. But, you know, if he's going to fight Michael Bisping, a lot of people, which is apparently going to happen, obviously Dana White, they made the announcement, what was it, last week? They're foregoing Yoel, the Soldier of God, Romero, and any type of contender in the middleweight division, and they're giving GSP a shot. And people are like, no, I'm not buying this, man. You know, I'm getting a lot of flack on the forum. I'm arguing with a lot of people, which I don't mind. But you know, people are just, they're tired of this crap. You know, they want to see the best fight the best. They don't want to see, you know, someone like Bisping dictate the terms of who he's going to fight and when he's going to fight. He's going to take a surgery, and you know, everybody owes him. The UFC owes him, and you know, we all should kiss the ground that he walks on. I mean, it's ridiculous. The only person that I could see that can get this treatment would be Conor McGregor. And you know, you can only act like this for so long. You know, even Conor McGregor eventually is going to have to do something here. You know, he's going to have to defend that 155-pound belt. Now, keep in mind, in the featherweight division, was it the 145-pound division? Featherweight. Jose Aldo is the only person, is the only champion that has defended that belt. And so, you know, you've got these belts that are not being defended. You've got this arbitrary matchmaking. Okay, you've got fighters just, you know, dictating the terms and trying not wanting to fight. And it's just a circus. It really is. And I'm just fed up with it, because I want the best fighting the best. I don't care about Michael Bisping's children. I don't care about, you know, him having to put his children in college and him having to pay a mortgage. It makes no difference to me. You know, the most important stakeholders in this equation are the fans. It's the fans that pay this man's salary. Just like all this criticism of Tyron Woodley. right? I mean, Tyron Woodley being taken to the wood shedder, whatever it's called, wood chipper, after he more convincingly beat Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Everybody's, you know, criticizing him. Oh, he went after the fans, and you know, he doesn't fight in an exciting style, and he doesn't do this, and he's got a bad attitude, and he claims victim. Are you kidding me? I mean, Jesus Christ. If Tyron Woodley did half the things that Michael Bisping did, they would be with pitchforks outside this man's house. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. What Michael Bisping gets away with, you know, publicly intoxicated, insulting Eddie Bravo, you know, having an argument and insulting this, spitting at this person and insulting that person after he knocks him out. Luke Rockhold, what he did to Luke Rockhold after he knocked him. I mean, come on, you know, I mean, and Tyron Woodley gets so much. I'm just really. The UFC has a problem. They got to clean it up here. They got to start acting like a sport, and they got to stop with these ridiculous fights. I mean, you know, look, I can understand putting on a fun fight, as Scott Coker calls it, that are not title fights. You know, I mean, but it's becoming laughable, and this whole GSP Bisping fight. If you've got people that nobody, a lot of people are against this fight, and if you've got flack from company guys like Joe Rogan, you know, who's a company man, then you know you have problems with the matchmaking. You know you have problems with, you know, some of the decisions out there. By the way, I was listening to Michael Bisping's podcast, which I do listen to it. I do listen to some podcasts on. Actually, all the shows on SiriusXM, because I've been a SiriusXM subscriber for 6 years now, and I have the SiriusXM app, and it's so pathetic. I mean, it's so pathetic how sensitive this guy is, and then he gets Puke Thomas to call in and kiss his ring, because Puke Thomas took a picture of him arguing with Eddie Bravo when Michael Bisping was drunk. Of course, inebriated in public like he seemingly so often is. And then, you know, Puke Thomas apologized and just totally emasculated himself. It was really embarrassing. I mean, it really was. I mean, come on. You know, you're a public figure and you're drunk in public and you're arguing with somebody. And what do you think is going to happen? People are going to take pictures of you. Yeah, moron. People are going to post that. And regardless of whether they're, quote, SiriusXM hosts, it doesn't make any difference. It's an absolute joke, folks. It really is. I would have taken that picture. I would have taken the video, and I would have done everything I can to post that so everybody can see it. Because you make news. You put yourself out there. You're a public figure. You don't have a right to try to regulate people's reactions. And that includes Puke Thomas, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Even though I'm disappointed about the Bisping-GSP match fight, I am excited, genuinely speaking, for the UFC 106 fight night taking place in Fortaleza, Brazil, ladies and gentlemen, this weekend. And according to Brian Stan, there is 20 lynchings a month in Fortaleza, Brazil. That's pretty remarkable. You know, I remember years ago when I was at a very young age, and I shouldn't be doing this, but I was watching. Remember they had the Faces of Death video and the Banned from Television video? They used to sell it at Easy Video or rent them at Easy Video. And, you know, me and my friends were a bunch of degenerates, and I was watching this stuff when I was 7 years old because I basically grew up in an supervised environment. Okay. There was no supervision. My parents were anywhere but watching me. And I saw this stuff. I saw this stuff at a young age. And yeah, the level of brutality and violence in Brazil almost makes you appreciate the judicial system that we have here in the United States. You know, you appreciate the idea of due process and not having to deal with as corrupt of a police force as the Brazilian police force is. I mean, Jesus. You know, some of those guys are just – I've seen video. You know, we heard the stories of the recent Olympics in Brazil. It's not a nice place, and it's not a nice area, some of these areas, people being killed on the streets. And, you know, you almost – you're not saying the United States, our police force, forces are completely immune from that, but I just think it's an apples and orange comparison, you know? And I certainly, as an athlete, wouldn't want to be in friggin' Brazil if people are being lynched. You know, who knows what's going to happen and whatnot. But, nonetheless, this card, it really is a very, very good card. And I may be on another podcast this weekend giving post-fight analysis of this. I have to wait and see. My guess is probably yes, because as you people know, I was laid off last Friday, and I have a lot of time on my hands now. So now I'm going to bed at like 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and it's just hard for me to wake up any time before like 3 or 4 o'clock. I swear, it's like my nights and days are mixed up. But the good news is, and I'm going to talk about this card in just a second, but the good news is that I've actually lowered my blood pressure. My blood pressure now, I've got it down to a healthy level, because that's something that was always been very concerning to me. I'm basically a very, very heavy person at this point, you know, 320 pounds. And my weight is fluctuating. Everybody knows that. Anybody that's followed this podcast knows that yours truly, Bob Carson, deals with depression brought on by capitalism, ladies and gentlemen. Soothing the pain of capitalism in our own way. Everybody feels alienated in the system. And, you know, some people deal with it in other ways. I don't know. You know, I deal with it by, I guess, eating. Being a disgusting hedonist as I am. But that's one good thing that has resulted from my unemployment at this point. And I've only been unemployed one other time in my life. So it's not like, you know, I'm constantly unemployed. And by and large, if I work for you, I'm actually a fairly decent employee. I've never been fired from a job as an adult. It is what it is. But you've got UFC 106 coming up, and there are so many fights I'm looking forward to on this card. And I don't know what fight in particular I'm looking forward to. There isn't one fight that I'm looking forward to more. But I will say that, here are some fights that are absolutely can't miss if you're an MMA fan. And especially if you're interested in these divisions that Johnny was talking about earlier, you know, the welterweight division. Well, you've got Damian Maia fighting Jorge Masvidal. And Damian Maia, this is a guy, 39 years old. He's won 6 or 7 fights in a row. He barely gets hit. He barely gets touched in his fight. I think maybe of the last, 5 or 6 fights, he's only been hit like 7, 8 times. He has one of these styles that can make him fight into his 40s. It doesn't make a difference. See, with some of these guys and girls, and it's not everybody, but it's some of these guys and girls, age is only a number. I mean, that's a cliche, but it's true. Because if you're someone like Damian Maia, who's 39 years old, he might as well be 29. You know, because he hasn't absorbed any damage. Now, he himself doesn't know how long he can compete. But his style lends itself to longevity in the sport of mixed martial arts by taking fighters down and submitting them. By just executing a few BJJ fundamentals to his success, and he's been just remarkably efficient in doing so. You know, choking out Carlos Condit in a minute. You know, I don't know who he's fought after. I mean, what is it, Neil Magny, just off the top of my head. You know, Matt Brown. You know, just a whole host of decent fighters. But the UFC put him in a position where he had to fight Masvidal if he wants to fight for the title. And I think, you know, he's going to do that. And I think he should win because Masvidal is also a good fighter. But Masvidal, you know, I don't see him being a devastating striker enough to beat Damian Maia. But then again, I picked Cowboy to beat Masvidal, so you could take that for what it's worth. But, you know, is he going to be able to stave off a takedown from Damian Maia? And if I had to bet, I would say no. I would say Damian Maia wins this fight via submission. Again, I you know, Masvidal could certainly win. I think it's going to be pretty close in terms of the odds, but you got to remember, this fight is being held in Brazil. You have that hometown crowd that, you know, I as a fighter, as a former fighter, I would never want to have to deal with, although you'll have to. But then again, Masvidal had that same problem when he fought, you know, Cowboy in Colorado. So really, what can you draw from that? But that certainly is a very, very interesting fight. It's not the co-main event. It is on the main card, and it's something I cannot wait to see that match. I really do. I mean, Damian Maia, to me, and I think the hardcore fans, is becoming, you know, a real attraction. You know, he's not a pay-per-view draw. He's never most likely going to be a pay-per-view draw. But he's someone that you certainly have to respect. And it's interesting to see how someone with a, I don't want to say a limited skill set, but someone with a dominant Brazilian jiu-jitsu platform or base, that's how he wins his fights. You know, Damian Maia doesn't knock people out. You know, he like I said, he takes you down and he strangles you. He's, you know, and he uses by and large the same takedowns every fight. It's interesting to see, you know, how far someone like that can go in the sport and how successful he can be. Because we've seen this on the women's side, you know, with Ronda and everything. Well, Ronda, it looks like, has reached her you know, her limit. So she can't she's not going to be able to do any of that anymore. But Damian Maia, on the other hand, is a little bit more well-developed in areas than Ronda Rousey, but nonetheless is a you know, one-sided fighter in terms of the output of skill that he displays. And so that's what from a hardcore fan's perspective, that's what it that's what makes him so appealing. And it's interesting because apparently Damian Maia can go, you know, to the very, very top of the welterweight division, beating Carlos Condit, you know, who fought for the title. I think there's a possibility he could definitely beat Woodley. Who knows? There's a lot of interesting matchups to be made at welterweight. But he's someone that I want to see, and he's someone that a lot of people really, really want to see. And interestingly enough, my brother was telling me this, that apparently earlier in his career, Damian Maia had a very, very serious blood infection that nearly took his own life. So he is someone that you know, presumably has shown resilience and is able to really overcome, you know, medical setbacks, which could have cost him not only his career, his life. So that's very, very interesting. You know, Jorge Masvidal, as I said, has got to be the underdog in this fight, but we'll see what happens. let's see here. Wait a minute. No, they're saying that this is. Hold on. Let me see. I'm online now, and it's saying that Maya versus Masvidal is for UFC UFC Nashville. And then I'm seeing it's set for UFC 211. But no, I'm fairly certain it's for this weekend. Let me just verify this. This is absolutely ridiculous, folks. Okay, because he was on the show. He was on, I think, a show with Ariel Helwani. This is at UFC 211. This is not this weekend. I thought this was this weekend at the UFC 106 fight night. Oh, what the hell? That's pretty offensive, ladies and gentlemen. Let me get the card in front of me. All right. I mean, this is just why wouldn't they put this fight on UFC 106 fight night? UFC 106. Okay, this is Belfort versus Gastelum. Yeah, this is UFC 106. Okay. Yeah, that fight is not on that card, but nonetheless, and I spoke about that for like 15 minutes or so. This is still a very good card, though, and I did not forget a lot of the fights on this card. A lot of these fights still were in my mind. Like, for example, I'm really just interested in the lightweight, light heavyweight, and middleweight fights, where you've got Edson Barboza versus Beneil Dariush. That is a very, very interesting fight because Edson Barboza just really has devastating striking. I mean, probably the best leg kicks out there. I mean, Jesus. You know, if you've seen that guy and his leg kicks, they're just absolutely scary. And, you know, he's only lost to, you know, people like Tony Ferguson and Donald Cerrone and also Michael Johnson over the past, you know, going on, 5 years. So he's a very, very good fighter, obviously. He's ranked number 5 in the lightweight division. And it's going to be interesting to see whether Dariush can get him on the ground. Because Dariush, I would say, although a very good striker, a very fluent striker, Beneil Dariush is, I would categorize him more as a ground fighter. You know, he has more submission wins than knockouts, and he's looked good in his last two fights. And the only time he's lost, really, since the very, very beginning of his UFC run, was versus Michael Chiesa. And that was a really, really difficult fight for him. And Chiesa looked very, very good in that fight. And beyond that, that's really it. You know, he's basically, something like 8-2 in the UFC or something like that. 7-2, something like that. But it's a really, really good fight. And I have particular interest in this fight because Barboza's from New Jersey. He actually trains in New Jersey. And anytime there's a New Jersey fighter fighting, I have real interest in seeing. Trains under Ricardo Almeida and Mark Henry, who owns a pizza restaurant, I believe, in Jersey City or something like that. And it's good to see a New Jersey guy from Brazil fighting there. But, you know, there are other New Jersey or Brazilian fighters that are opening up shop here, training in New Jersey. Claudia Gadelha is another one. Claudia Gadelha and what's his name? Henan Barral are training in Randolph, New Jersey, which is up north. And that's, of course, right by the AMA Academy with Jim Miller, Mickey Gall, and what's his name? Billy D. Williams, who we had on the show before. And so it's good to see New Jersey having a real, real good training place for fighters out there. And New Jersey definitely has its share of MMA fighters. It always will, ladies and gentlemen. Always will. The next fight really of consequence for me is, the middleweight main event fight. You know, I am looking forward to the lightweight fight, but I don't think that Shogun and John Volante are really at that level yet where they're going to be able to compete for a title. I don't think they're there yet. I mean, obviously, Shogun has done a lot in the sport and has competed in major organizations and has won championships in other organizations. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's still not of retirement age. He's still, you know, what, 36 years old, 35 years old. You know, won fight of the night, won, you know, he's won knockout bonuses, and he's also won the UFC lightweight championship going back years ago. And he's a legend. He really is, and his career is still not done. So we're still able to see him fight. But, you know, John Volante, on the other hand, both these guys are going to go in there, and it's going to be presumably a stand-up fight, and a very vicious stand-up fight it will be. You know, it's going to be basically a slugfest, and, you know, we'll see if John Volante could, you know, break into the higher points of the UFC rankings. I don't know, but you know, I'm not really too curious to see this as an analyst, maybe as a fan. You've got Hua, who's ranked number seven, and John Volante is ranked number 13. So we'll see what happens. The main event, I am interested in seeing. I'm always interested in seeing Vitor, because I think you know, Vitor really has gotten a lot of flack for, you know, people discredit him and they discount his achievements. And I think Vitor's still potentially a very, very good fighter. And we don't know exactly, you know, where he's going to end up. He's still capable of beating these younger fighters or older fighters. You know, he not too long ago beat Dan Henderson. He's still got very, very fast and heavy hands, and he's still always going to be hugely popular in Brazil. You know, he did an open workout yesterday, and it was, from what I was told, it was just packed. People are always going to want to see him, and they're always going to be rooting for Vitor Belfort, you know, for obvious reasons. But then you've got Kelvin, who I was so impressed. Again, another person that is another fighter that has struggled to make weight and has gone up to 185 and looked absolutely amazing against Tim Kennedy. A really retired Tim Kennedy. And, you know, this is someone that really, now that he shouldn't have any more problems making weight, should be a new Kelvin Gastelum. This should be like, you know, you've got Johnny Hendricks 2.0, while you've got Kelvin Gastelum 2.0. You know, this is someone that could really, really be having a resurgence in his career, and you know, should be the favorite to beat Vitor. Should be able to beat Vitor. But you don't know. We don't know that's going to happen. I mean, you know, Vitor's only losses have come from really the top fighters in the middleweight division. You know, he lost to Rockhold, Weidman, but was giving Weidman a difficult time until Weidman took him down. He lost to Gegard Mousasi. Okay, he lost in his last fight to, Gegard was his last fight. Then he lost to Jacare, which, again, is, you know, I kind of knew that was going to be a real difficult fight for him. But really, that's it. you know. And then before the loss to Weidman, he lost to John Jones. So, and in that between his loss to John Jones and Weidman, he beat Michael Spitzbing, Luke Rockhold, and Dan Henderson. So, you can't really say that Vitor is done. You really can't. Although, you know, clearly he's at the down point in his career. Being 39 years old, okay, you know, not winning, doesn't really have much leverage as far as what weight he's going to be fighting at. You know, he had to go down to 185 because just at 205, it's really, really hard. Although, you know, that's not to say that he doesn't have victories at 205. He does, but look at the structure there. You know, you've still got the big guys. You've got Daniel, and you've got John Jones, who should be fighting sometime soon. You've got Ovin St. Preux, who's more of a journeyman. You got, of course, Rumble Johnson, who's fighting. You got Gustafson fighting Glover Teixeira. You've got Jared Cannonier. Who did Jared fight recently? The Jared Cannonier, the TSA worker. I forget who he fought, but there was somebody that it was really kind of. Oh yeah, it was Glover Teixeira. Yeah, what am I saying? So, yeah, you've got a lot of fighters out there. It's just going to be hard for Vitor to fight to compete in that division. And so it's good. It's good that he's fighting in middleweight, but this is really the last stand of his career. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen to him. If he loses in a similar fashion, maybe he can go to Bellator. Maybe he can go to another MMA organization. I don't know, folks. I really don't, but we'll have to see. All right. So that's this weekend. That's going to be on Fox Sports 1, ladies and gentlemen. Fox Sports 1, okay, which I've been very, very critical of. Not offering any type of real criticism of the UFC, more of a UFC, you know, promotional channel, rubber stamp for anything the boss, Dana White, wants said. Remember, Dana White had to reiterate the other day that he's the boss. He still calls the shots, okay? It's Dana White. And don't you forget that. Let's not forget that it's Dana White who's in charge of everybody's career. Dana White has everybody's employment in his hands, all right? You know what the sad part is that he really, really believes that. He enjoys that, Dana White. That's why I think a lot of people are rubbed the wrong way against Dana White, you know? He does. He puts himself in the middle of everything. He makes it so, you know, it's about him. Did you see when he fought, or when Tyron Woodley fought last weekend against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson? And Dana White was pissed off at the decision because Dana White doesn't like Tyron Woodley. And he puts the belt on Tyron Woodley and he seemingly storms out of the cage. I mean, come on. You know, and then what's his name? Elias Cepeda wrote a decent article for the Underground about, you know, what Dana White should do and how a normal president of an organization should react. You know, not, you know, insult the fighters and not, you know, just, you know, basically do what Dana White does. And so, you know, people are starting to speak out. I think people are starting to fighters are starting to test a free agency. I think movements now are making us understand the need for a collective approach to dealing with a tyrant like Dana White. You know, who knows what the new owners are gonna do? Because the UFC is the UFC, and Dana White is just another rich guy. At the end of the day, you know, I mean, it's the fighters, it's the labor. That's what matters. And so could the UFC go on without Dana White? I think so. I mean, again, it's Dana White. Are people paying to see Dana White? Are people buying pay-per-views because Dana White's there? No, I don't think so at all. You know, I mean, Dana White may have a say in the marketing. Dana White may have a say, definitely has a say in the matchmaking and who fights who. In the public feuds, you know, now him and Tyron Woodley are having a public feud now. Sort of like, you know, Austin McMahon in the WWE. But aside from that, you know, it's really very insignificant. I mean, Bellator gets sometimes 2 million viewers an event. And that has nothing to do with Scott Coker. All right, Scott Coker is the complete opposite of Dana White. You don't know that Scott Coker's there. Coker's in the background. And he's not all abrasive and F you and you know, just almost like a self-righteous, you know, tyrant like Dana White is, like he appears to be. You know? So we may see that. I mean, we may see. I don't know what his relationship is with Ari Emanuel, but, you know, I'm sure that Dana White is just as replaceable as anybody is. And, you know, he would have you believe differently, but that's just maybe the case with him. You know, and that's not to say that we're completely biased against Dana White. Believe me, I'm not ideologically opposed to Dana White or the UFC. I watch the UFC. And when they do good things, you know, I commend them for it. They've done a lot of good things for women's MMA. They've certainly bent over backwards for Cyborg, who's completely tainted. And now Amanda, you know, has said that she no longer wishes to fight at featherweight. She no longer wishes to fight Cyborg, which I think is good. You know, they've tried to bring fans more MMA. And certainly there's been an abundance of MMA over the past 6 or 7, 8 years. Maybe too much, maybe too many pay-per-view cards, maybe too much MMA. You know, that's something we could thank, in part, I'm sure, Dana White for, okay? Fighters are popular now. I mean, you know, you just had yesterday Jessica Ai, who barely is you know, keeping her UFC spot, throwing out the first pitch on International Women's Day in Cleveland, Ohio. That's great. I mean, is that going to make Jessica any more money? I don't think so. But, you know, giving her the notoriety, that's great. That, you know, that's something that didn't exist, you know, 10 years ago, you know, when there was only a few, when the IFL was in business, and there's only a few Strikeforce and others. I was there, believe me. But, you know, so there's stuff to be said, but for the most part, the UFC and the fighters continue to languish, there's just not a lot of opportunity out there for fighters in terms of upwards mobility. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here. When I come back, we're going to wrap up the show, and maybe we'll I don't know. We'll take a few calls if they come in. 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. And we'll be right back after this timeout. Thank you.
Hello. This is your host for The Missing and Abducted.
What a great song that is, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know the band that plays that song, but I know it's a goddamn great song. What do you say, huh? Paradigm. It's a very, very political song, folks, because everything is political in nature. There's just no question about that. My name is Bob Carson. This is Carson's Corner. We really appreciate you joining in. We really appreciate Johnny Hendricks, former UFC welterweight champion, calling us in the first hour to discuss his career. And, you know, we wish him the best of luck. We really, really do. And it's good to have him on the program again. And I'm sure we'll be, you know, posting this on forums, and a lot of you will be tuning in to listen to what Big Rig had to say here on Carson's Corner. It's coming up near 9 o'clock, and we're only scheduled to go till 9 o'clock here today. But not really. I mean, like I said, you've got the UFC 106 fight night coming up this weekend. We spoke about some other news here. Spoke about Michael Bisping and GSP. There's also the story about Nate Diaz not wanting a fight with Eddie Alvarez. Yeah, Nate Diaz turning down a fight with Eddie Alvarez, which is almost to be expected, because basically, you know, Nate Diaz at this point is tied to Conor McGregor. You know, I mean, that's where he's going to make his money. And so he's not going to fight anybody else. And I got to tell you something. I am, and I've never been a big fan of the Diaz brothers. You know, for whatever reason, they are a draw. You know, people are intrigued by them, you know, particularly on the West Coast. But I think they're overrated. I don't think that either of them are at the top of their divisions or the best of what they do. But, you know, they do have, like I said, drawing power that other fighters do not have in similar divisions. You know, so I guess, you know, Nick hasn't fought in a while. When the hell was the last time Nick Diaz fought? And Nate Diaz, you know, last we saw him, as I said, was versus Conor. And so his career, his fate is almost tied to Conor. And so he didn't want to take this fight versus Eddie Alvarez, because it would be a reduction in money. And, you know, I could really, really not blame him for that, because he doesn't hold the title. It's not like he's holding up a division, whereas Bisping is holding up a complete division, you know? So that's my problem. But that happened over the last couple days, actually. You also have Frankie Edgar that's taking on Yair Rodriguez. That's a fight I'm looking forward to, because that's a fight that really definitely has implications for the featherweight division, which Frankie fought Jose Aldo twice. Frankie, of course, was a champion, and his last fight was against Jeremy Stephens. He won that fight, and prior to that, he lost against Jose Aldo. But in any event, that's going to be a really good fight, because that'll tell you who's going to basically, who should get the next title fight after Max Holloway and Jose Aldo fight. And, you know, that's for the title. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens if Max wins that fight. But if he doesn't, there's more than enough rematches to take place to keep the fans happy. And of course, there's Jose Aldo, who would be great if he could fight Conor McGregor. You know, maybe Jose would have to go up in weight, which he's said he would be willing to do. Or, you know, maybe Conor would come back down. I doubt it. But in any event, you know, we could see that fight. But if Max wins, then it's, you know, he has a lot of fights that he could fight that really, really could make for exciting fights. And I don't know if it would translate to pay-per-view buys, but you get the picture. you know what's happening, folks, okay? You certainly do. I don't know when that fight is happening, but I know it was officially announced. And we look forward to that because Yair Rodriguez is somebody on the rise. There's no question about that. He's someone that really is doing very, very well and could be the future of that division at just 25 years old. And his dynamic striking. And, you know, it could be too much for Frankie Edgar. The veteran, Frankie Edgar. The answer, Frankie, the answer, Edgar, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So we've got about 5 minutes left here on Carson's Corner with Bob Carson, one of the longest standing podcasts out there. Going on 11 years, folks. I mean, yeah, it's been over 11 years. We are going strong. I may open up some sort of funding or some sort of donation thing. I don't know. I've never done that before, but I know that you can. Other guys do that. Other podcasts do that. I would never ask for any money to do this show, okay? I don't have an expectation of receiving any money. I do it because I like it. I do it because I think it's necessary. I think this is really, really, really interesting. You know, we need to have shows like this, alternative voices, voices that challenge the status quo, that are not beholden to the promoter, that are not beholden to, you know, fake fanboy MMA media, so-called journalism, which is just, you know, like today, like I was telling you, with Puke Thomas having to call in and apologize. It's all this buddy-buddy. Oh, hey, buddy-buddy. Hey, buddy-buddy. How are you? You know, let me buy you a drink at the bar type of crap. And that exists, I guess, in quote-unquote professional environments, but, you know, we need rogue warriors out there. We need people that you know, again, are fiercely independent, that have clearly defined ethics and are not bought and paid for by the UFC, which I cannot say that about anybody. I really can't, you know. And even tonight on Bisping's podcast, they were talking about politics and being politicians and, you know, feuding with other podcasts and what that means for, you know, a contract negotiations. It's this, all this unsanctioned behavior, which pisses me off. But it exists. I'm writing my thesis on it. I'm writing my dissertation. I'm doing a study on it, in part. And it's how this corrupt system works, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about what you do. It's about who you know. It's about the unsanctioned behavior, the kissing up, the sucking up, the, you know, hey, buddy, buddy, hey, you know. And those that wear their heart on their sleeves and those that are not reserved often get the shaft. It's just disgusting. It really is. All right. In any event, let me tell you how you could friend me on Facebook. Please do so. Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can listen to my political show right here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/BobCarsonMMA. Big thanks to Johnny Henricks. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.